Welcome back, everybody, to the Who Do You Like Here podcast. I'm Joey Sino. With me, as always, is the kid. We've got a great guest coming on tonight. Mr. Sappy Joseph Jr. is going to join the podcast, talk a little bit of Gulfstream. A couple questions for him.
Who better to have on than the guy that's been the guy at Gulfstream the last few years? Right? Yeah. Pretty exciting podcast to have. I mean, big name trainer, probably one of the bigger name trainers that we've had on the podcast. We've had a lot of names on here, but yeah. You know, Safi's been having himself a great couple of years as of recent, and like I said, is the king of Gulfstream.
Yeah, synonymous with Gulfstream.
Yeah. Say Gulfstream Park, you say Safi Joseph in the next sentence. So it's
pretty much.
Yeah. It's pretty much how that goes.
So I have a conversation with him, and then we're gonna go over to the fairgrounds for the Louisiana Derby and go ahead and cap that late pick five, which coincidentally is the last five races.
Yeah, it is nice that lines up. It seems like normal, good tracks, fun tracks, tracks that I want to handicap all end on the late pick five. Yeah. It's great.
Tracks not in Florida on the Gulf side.
Yeah.
They do things differently.
Funny how that works out. It's kind of cool how that happens.
I guess. Great week last week. Solid handicap in there, kid. Start right off.
We started off really well. We had the five underneath
Mr. Crowley,
but had the five underneath in some facet. If you spread in that one, which seemed like a spread race anyway, there's a couple horses that, you know, you probably could narrowed it down to three.
Well, you had the 8-5 and it came in 5-8.
The thrill of victory would have been cool if you got up, but
totally disappointed in the six, Mr. Citizen K. Disappointed.
Did not fire.
I think, you know what, you go back and listen to the podcast. There was a lot of support for Mr. Crowley there, as well as it was the six. I'm surprised it wasn't your top pick, the way we
gone back. I like Paco. I was high on Paco. And
yeah, he's good on those days.
Yeah, he's very good on those days. Yeah. Right there. Just, you know, you got to catch him when he's hot.
Yeah.
You know, second leg, I had some scratches. So your top pick ended up being the one. And then we went into very, very high detail on that seven, which you liked and ultimately threw in. You know, at the end of it, because you're like, I'll have it underneath and some, you know, but then we're like, now that there's scratches, who's the speed here? Who would take?
With the scratch of the one, bringing in the seven, which, I mean, Gail's evening wasn't even close.
Yardio
took him right out.
I know I said I needed to see one. Well, I saw one and I saw enough to put that horse on the ticket for many, many, many trips ahead. But I mean, I should have known something was up with Bobby DeBono when he's bringing a horse here in this spot. You know, I should have known. I think everybody should have known. I'm sorry if I talked you off him, but he was much the best.
And as good as he was running at Golden Gate, it kind of made sense.
So. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So
hopefully everybody kept putting it together, though. Third leg was Arthur's Ride. This one I feel bad about.
What?
Well, in this one, my top pick was Cape Trafalgar with Tyler, and thought was going to get the necessary trip. And, in speaking with Elio, I know that he was very high on the one as well. And as we were talking, so the only one you really got to be concerned with is Martin Alvarado on the five.
Yeah.
First time out for the year, but the horse is a beast. Yeah. Looks like the workouts are good.
It's Martin Alvarado. Do you talk Elio off of the five?
Oh, no, he had the one.
Yeah.
But his bets were already in.
Oh, gotcha.
He had gone single with the one.
Oh,
and I started talking about the five and I felt like I put the jujus out there.
But I mean, the five was going to win regardless. I mean, it was a five. It's Junior Alvarado. It's Belmont. I feel like it's a combination that doesn't miss. And especially when you have success last time out, you know, it's almost like, how do you not have that in there?
I mean, lightly raced horse, but if that horse can stay healthy and they keep it on the work tab, that's going to be a horse to mess with, to contend with. Next race was the one horse that was admissible. That was my fourth choice. Yep. That was way down the list.
You really had to spread in that leg.
You did, but you got the price you needed because that was the race to get the price. And I had put on the ticket earlier that my single would be in the last race, and you got spread in the earlier races where you can.
Yeah, one in the last race getting up by the shadow of the wire. I mean, timed perfectly. It looked like Paco may have pulled that one out, and Ired said, nope.
Yeah.
Pulled the cord right at the end there.
It's exciting, too, because we had a follower post that they hit the pick five.
Yeah.
Nothing more exhilarating than winning it by a nose in the last race and, you know, and following along and then getting the win in the last race.
So I have a gripe with Gulfstream, right? So the late pick five paid $1,700, which is great. That is a great payout.
Sure.
Right. But the early pick five, I was surprised because Elio, had a great day. I was sitting there, we were texting back and forth. He had a great first five races, right? Singled in a right spot.
Yeah.
Perfect spot. I mean,
great barely, ticket structure.
And it only paid $1,200 for the pick five. I thought with the price that he got in, what was it? The second leg, the first two legs. I mean, the favorite was nowhere to be found, you know. Yeah. It was a $21 horse. And then it was a $10 horse following that. Then there was a heavy favorite, which wasn't at the time the favorite. It's 5-2.
No, that was late money.
Yeah. Late money, but it was 5-2 going off, when you're betting your pick five.
Yeah.
And then, the nine was in the next leg was $3 horse. Yep. And
3-4-1.
And then the favorite in the last leg.
That's the one that did it.
Yeah.
New Rome, even then, though, Jen Antonucci, Castellano.
Even then, though, if you look at the fields, I mean, the first two races, the second race, it was a 12 horse field. Mm-hmm. You would think that the money was spread all over there, that if you can get the winner in that leg, you're probably sitting pretty good. You know, yeah. $1,200 isn't bad. I'm not saying that it's a bad, because you had two kind of chalks come in there, but I was expecting like a three game, like, you know, maybe $2,500 payout for that pick five. I wasn't expecting a $1,200 payout.
And he had options in that last race. And I mean, it never fails when you got more than one option. The chalk comes in and gets the lowest price, but a win's a win.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you'll take it. It's a, you know, a good little profit there for him. But again, I was just looking at that. I was like, how does this not pay more?
I know.
You know, I was looking at him like, how is this not paying what I think it's going to pay?
I get it.
But, you know, just one of those things. And then the late pick five, you know, pays $1,700. So $500 more than what I thought was a better price. But whatever, be that as it may, is what it is.
I had that try, though, that early try. That really helped.
Yeah, you had yourself quite the day. You had a good start.
It was a great day for me on the verticals. I'm not trying to spread, you know, if you go by my ticket, it's like, you know, $300-$400 for a ticket or whatever. I did say single the last race probably would have brought you to about $192 if you spread out my ticket and just single the last like I'd put out there. But it's still $192 at Gulfstream. And we just talked about how the pays are sometimes. Yep. It's the juice isn't worth the squeeze sometimes, but you can really pick up the pieces on these verticals.
Yeah.
Try isn't exact as we're playing just great on Saturday.
Oh, yeah.
For most of the races.
Yeah, and then over the weekend, too, they had the NHC that was over the weekend. Yep. That was pretty cool.
Tournament going on.
I don't know how to get into those, but I kind of want to get into them. I think I would do quite well.
You got to go on. You got to go in these tournaments. And
I looked online a little bit. If anybody listening knows a lot about it, I would love for you to shoot me some DMs, because I want to know how to get in one of these bad boys.
Talk to Elio.
But
don't get in the $5,000 entry.
Elio, I need some information, but I need you to scale it back like a few grand.
Is there a $5 entry?
Like, I need you to scale it back like $5,000.
I'm trying to pay for a wedding here. I can't drop the $5,000 right now.
Yeah, well, wedding's coming up soon, so maybe I can scratch a little bit more after. But yeah, I mean, overall, it was a great day. You know, I think it was pretty solid. And, you know,
that's the way it is at Gulfstream, though. We've historically been really good at Gulfstream. I mean, we start bouncing around for tracks. We're going to fairgrounds here.
We have been historically good at fairgrounds.
We've had a lot of success at fairgrounds, and you're getting dry weather this week.
And I don't know. This card looks intense. It looks tough to handicap, I think, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I'm not feeling as confident as I once was. I think there are a lot of horses.
We say this every week. We put the precursors out there like, we're going back. We're usually good. You know, and then we go ahead and blow up the tote board.
But and I mean, it is
in
early.
Most cases,
yeah, it is early. So disclaimer, we're recording on a Tuesday. Typically we record on Thursdays.
This is early.
This is an early, early first look at the card. So those picks that we make here may subject to change come race day, but early look today.
Yeah. Well, we are in March Madness.
Yeah, it is March Madness.
Full throttle.
Like I said, I mean, I'll watch the races. I'll watch our pick five, but I probably won't watch much more than that.
Well, if you watch them at my house, there'll be TVs up there for games and horse racing. So
true. Very true.
That happens. But overall, great week last week. Thought it was pretty invigorating.
Yep.
As far as prices, kept you interested. And even when the favorites won, at least you got some bombs underneath. If you spread or got the right spots.
did you see, it is Tuesday, so did you see the Mike Rapoli response to Swift?
Yeah, I did see it.
That was probably one of the funniest responses I've seen Rapoli give. Because
I saw your response, boom, Rapoli.
if anybody wants to check it out, it's on Twitter. I reposted it, but it was pretty funny. I thought it was pretty comical because, I mean, Rapoli, I mean, he tweets a lot of stuff, as does Swift, and everybody knows what Swift does and what he, you know, tweets out. But he was throwing shade at Rapoli for, you know, look at all these, you know, two-year-olds that are just not racing, like, weird, like, look at the aftercare, like, you got, you know,
you're, all you're doing is adding to aftercare.
It's like, okay, that you're making accusations on a guy that's very active on Twitter, so get ready, buckle up.
And he just spits out knowledge.
Sure, shit. Yeah, he gives them the lineup of every single one, and he says, yeah, you're probably more knowledgeable on what's going on in the UK or North Korea, so if you want to fly out there today, I will personally buy your ticket. If you fly to North Korea, I'll put you on a private jet today. That was like the funniest response ever, but...
Good comeback.
Pretty comical, yeah. But yeah, I mean, Twitter is a fun place sometimes, and
it's the spot to go early in the week. Usually, yeah. I would say that compared to last year, last year's Tuesday Twitter was just
brutal.
Torching.
Yeah, brutal.
Yeah,
but it's mild down. I mean, certain lawsuits will do that too. You know, so that'll have some hindrance on what you
defamation.
How often. Yeah, that
defamation shit will, of character suits usually curb that down.
That'll turn the volume down a little bit, but
just a tad.
But yeah, overall, I mean, I'm really excited to get Safi on. I think got some questions here to
ask. Yeah, I've got some interesting questions. Before we get to that, I just want to ask you, any upset for first round?
I think Wisconsin's losing first round.
And they play?
They were an upset. I was looking at was it 12 versus 5, right? Or something like that, right?
Are they 12-5?
I think it's a 12-5.
Oh, that doesn't set up good. Oh, it's James Madison.
That's right? What it is.
Yeah.
I think it's James Madison.
Saw that on Barstool at Big Cat. And
Yeah. James Madison. Yeah. I think they're going to win.
Button heads.
I don't think Wisconsin's that strong. Drake, I forget who they play to. I think Drake is an upsetter. I was talking to Sebastian about this a little bit.
Z-Bass?
Yeah. He's been following March Madness like the plague. He's been watching an obscure amount of games this season. So he's been watching and he was doing some research, and Drake might
be like Rain Man when it comes to
I mean, when he came over and we were watching games, I think if I didn't parlay a couple of those, I would have went like seven for nine, seven for ten.
Yeah.
You know, like on a Saturday car, that's a pretty good clip.
We're not even talking championship week. We're just talking standard.
Yeah. So I got greedy on a couple of them because I was like, I'm not taking -110. Like I'll just throw a little bit extra.
Money's money.
Yeah.
Just got to load it up.
Yeah. I'm also on wedding duty here. So I'm not able to go hog wild like I wish I could, you know, but, you know,
I know you've got some obligations and focus otherwheres. Take it all. Who's going to take it all this year? Who's your top pick?
Houston? I think Houston.
You're still on Houston.
I think Houston has played the best team basketball that I've seen out of a team. I know UConn's got the number one overall seed. I think UConn's going to get smacked by somebody at some point in the tournament. I'm really high on Houston. Yeah.
I think Purdue's got the easiest path to get to the
Elite Eight. Purdue is soft, though. You shut down Edie, it's over.
They have the easiest path to get to the Elite Eight, I think, out of any number one seed. I actually like Creighton.
Creighton, if they shoot well.
I think Creighton on their A game can possibly get to the Final Four, and matchups then get kind of tricky.
Creighton can shoot at that 70% clip that they beat UConn with. I mean, they'll be hard to beat, but you know how that happens. You know, the team will run hot for a little bit, and then sometimes the buckets don't fall. And then one of the games that you need them to fall and they don't, those are the games that you end up losing, so...
Yeah, it's tough because there's so many teams this year, a lot of new teams this year and teams that have been in it before, but didn't bode well really, at least last year. So recent form, if we're talking like from a horse racing term, but so I don't really know if this is just going to be.
NC State is going to be a first round bounce.
You think? I mean, they played a lot of games in a row.
Cinderella story is going to run out. It's either going to be this game or definitely the next game.
That's tough because they are hot, but how long can you go to keep running these? These wins.
Yeah, I mean, they play great basketball, but I think they busted their nut in the ACC tournament. They're happy to be there.
And then they got a tough matchup with Texas A&M,
Texas A&M.
They're
going to lay the hammer. And then a one lock that I think I have, and I use lock loosely, but I think it's a lock, is any game.
Do you use it loosely or you don't use it loosely?
I use it loosely. Mississippi State under.
I was just going to say.
The under on any game that they play, because they play just this disgusting type of basketball where it's like at half we're looking at a 25-30 game.
Yeah.
You know, so.
According to a Barstool personality, Oakland plays at a high pace.
Yeah, that's Rico. Yeah.
Jesus.
He's in the doghouse. I don't know if you follow him.
But he's always in the doghouse.
He fell asleep live on stream. Like, he didn't fall asleep. He went to sleep.
Took a nap. So. Dave's got to stop paying these clowns. He's got to stop paying these clowns that don't want to work.
Yeah.
All right. Enough NCAA. Let's go ahead and get our guests. Yeah,
let's bring on the talent here.
Sounds good. All right, now joining on the podcast, a name easily recognized in the horse racing industry, renowned trainer with over 1,000 wins in the U.S. and current leading trainer at the Gulfstream Park Championship Meet, Mr. Safi Joseph Jr. Welcome aboard, Safi.
Welcome.
Thanks for having me aboard.
Absolutely.
Mr. Gulfstream himself.
That's right. So we caught you still working because we could hear the horses in the back.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we're still checking out some horses, obviously, but we arranged it to get on the podcast with you today. So thanks for having us on.
Oh, appreciate that. No problem. Quick couple of questions here for you. You're over 22% win here at the Gulfstream, not only at Gulfstream, but in general for your career here, 52% in the money. Safi, tell us all the secret. What do you credit your immense success so far?
I mean, just you need the right owners to give you the support to give the horses. There's no two ways about it. The secret puzzle today is having good horses, and you get those horses from the owners. After that, you have to put together, obviously, a good crew to take care of them and have them the best they can be, and that's what we try to do.
So what does a typical day look like for you in the Safi barn? You know, I mean, do you have like a typical regiment that you follow? Like, what do you do to get the horses ready for, let's say, the big race day or big race weekends?
Yeah, I mean, every day is basically different. Like, Mondays is our checkup day at Gulfstream, Tuesdays is our checkup day at Palmetto's, and that's in the winter when we're just at Gulfstream Palmetto's, basically. And then, obviously, we have a set breeze days, Fridays, Saturdays for each area, and you just try to be thorough and communicate with each other, and that's what you need. You need a good team. That's what makes any barn successful is you need a good team that care and put things together and are looking for the minor changes. With horses, small things matter, and small changes make a massive difference.
Yeah, winning also helps.
Yeah, correct. But winning is going to take care of itself. Once you have the right horses and you do those things, winning is going to basically become, it's going to happen. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
It's going to happen. As I said, the horses are going to win because you have the right horses. And once you do those things, the small things, that's what's going to create winning.
Yeah, it's the product of the hard work you put in before. You know, it's going to come regardless, right? I mean, you put the hard work in, you get the results you want. You're not afraid of the limelight there. You know, you've been in the limelight pretty much since you started your training career. You know, you're the youngest trainer to win the Barbados Triple Crown in that circuit. So I guess as a 22-year-old and being into that success realm, you know, what was that like taking down a very prestigious, you know, Triple Crown in that circuit?
Well, at the time, you think, you know, and you think you're good, but then now you get older and you look back. I was 22 when I won it, and then you look back, now I'm 37. You look back and realize you didn't know anything. You just had a good horse that took you along that road. You know?
Yeah.
And that's the truth of the matter. And you get to 37 now, you think you know. And then every couple of years, I feel like we're 2 or 3 years from reaching our maximum. And then we get there, and I feel like in 2 or 3 years, we get there, and I feel like we're 2 or 3 years away. So the key is basically you never know with horses. You always continue to learn. There's no expert. If you show me an expert, I'll show you somebody that doesn't know, because the ones that think they're experts are basically the ones that don't know. I feel like whenever we feel we know, we're becoming complacent. And that's one thing. The more I've become to understand it, is the more I've accepted that. You know what I mean?
Understood.
Yeah, it's like it's just a different mentality, I guess. Yeah, you know, it's like it's kind of cool to see that growth, right? Like you had the success early, you had the success now, but you look back and you're like, man, that's...
I know, crap. Yeah,
it's crazy to say when you win the Triple Crown there too. But the horse was, right, are you talking to me, right? That's that was the horse that won, correct?
Correct, yeah. Are you talking to me?
He was the horse that won. How special was that horse? I mean, how special were those races? I mean, as a 22-year-old, I can only imagine the excitement and the fun that brought at such an early stage in your career.
No, most definitely. It just every race in that was probably the most special point of my career. At that point, you're not really thinking about ever envisioning that I was going to be training in USA, let alone doing well. So, I mean, at that point, I would come to the USA to watch races, and I would be in awe at Gulfstream just watching Todd Pletcher in the paddock, and he was dominating during those times. And I would have just been like, if someone told me, I remember the first time I went on Gulfstream backside, he's working for Latino Attire, and he took me on the backside, and just to be on the backside, it was around the same time where you're talking to me, won the Triple Crown. I felt like just walking on the backside, I felt like it was like the best thing ever. You fast forward and see where we are right now is like a dream come true. And thank God everything, he's blessed us in the way that things have unfolded, and you just hope to get better and continue to improve. That's it. I mean, I feel like there's always room for improvement. I feel like we have a lot of room to improve.
Such a cool upcoming, you know. And like, who gave you, or how did you get into the US circuit? So you're training in Barbados, and then what transitioned you into getting horses back here in Gulfstream and in the US?
Well, it kind of has to do with, are you talking to me again? I mean, I was planning to bring him because I started to get the dreams to like go to that next level, and I was going to bring him to America. I thought that he might be able to win a stake or win a greatest stake, win a grade three up here. So he would put us on the map pretty early. Unfortunately, he had an injury in Barbados, a horse, two horses were breezing, and one of them ran into the back of him, and he got loose. The horse hit him directly from behind. So he was off for like a year, and I think that sped up the process of me coming, because maybe I would have just kept procrastinating and never had the confidence to come. Sure. And so I took a trip up to Florida and got my trainer's license, and then went back to Barbados and told my dad, you know what, I'm going to come to America. He was like, are you crazy? You can't do that. You know what I mean? I said, I'm going. Cause I'm 22 at that point, or 23. And I mean, you're kind of young. You have dreams, and you think your dreams are going to become reality. And that's the furthest thing from the truth at that point.
Yeah.
So we came up, I brought two horses that we had bought at OBS, maybe the year before. We brought them back to America and we took them to Ocala because we couldn't get stalls anywhere. Started with two horses, then we bought like four or five more in the sale. Had a friend named Ricky Griffith. He passed away last year. He was training in Woodbine. He was a jockey there for a while. He gave us one horse for one of his owners. So we started with seven horses. And finally, we met a trainer actually named Jose Pinchin and at the sales. And he said, you know what? Go to Calder. Go next door. They have a training center and get stalls there. And every day, just keep asking Calder to give some stalls. And that's what we did. Every week, we'd ask for stalls. And every week, they'll tell us no and no and no. And like 4 or 5 months in, we got seven or eight stalls, and we got in there, and then we won our first race, obviously, a couple months later, and just started to basically tread our water. I mean, barely survived, basically.
Yeah.
That's how it was for the first few years.
Just building that stock up, you know, and it sounds like you had to be pretty persistent at that point, you know, a young cat in the game, and obviously right. The industry being what it is, you know, but every day just grinding. You know, to get there, that's...
Yeah, every success story starts off... When I was 22, I knew everything. That's pretty much how it goes.
But yeah, I mean, now you fast forward, right? And now you've gotten some very, very talented horses, some great mounts. I mean, Skippy Longstockings, White Abario, New York Traffic, you know, O'Connor. I mean, Lord Miles, like all these horses that you've got now, right? And all these big wins. Out of all the success that you've currently had, and obviously we've got many years of success coming as well, you know, which of those horses or which of those moments here in the U.S. and what stage kind of brought you the most excitement, I guess, to this point?
I mean, it's kind of hard to say because I think like I still get excited for every win pretty much. Yeah. That's how much it means to me. But if you want to say like brought more attention to you, it would have to be Math Wizard. We won the Pennsylvania Derby. Mm-hmm. It was a grade one. It was our first graded stake ever. And it happened to be a grade one. He's a horse we claimed for $25,000. And he kind of took us on a journey. We claimed him for $25,000. We won a shake that day. Ran him back in a starter allowance. He ran second, which we thought we would win. But then we took a chance to go to the Wood Memorial with him, and he ran fourth in the wood. It was a big effort in the wood. And then after that, we just traveled. He traveled me to every track. Again, you talk about horses teaching you. So we went to him to Oakland after that. Then we went to the Ohio Derby, ran second. I think he ran third in the Indiana Derby. West Virginia, he ran a bit disappointing. Brought him back home, freshened him up, and took him to, obviously, Parks. And the rest is history. I mean, he won that race that day. It was a small field. We didn't even know if we were going to enter. And John Finelli, the owner, he said, let's give it a shot. We entered him. Maxim Security was a favorite in that race. And he scratched when he entered. So, I mean, he scratched. And the big favorite came on the race. And we went to that race hoping to run third. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
On the day, you were just hoping to run third. And down the lane at the eighth pole, looks like he had a chance to win. And he never used to win. That's actually his only win for us. I mean, he's run some big races but never won. And obviously, that day he got his head in front, and Irad gave him a great ride. It was probably the difference between winning and losing. So it was a special moment. It was a moment that I kind of feel like it's always in my memory. And he would say he put us on the map for people to know that we could train better quality horses.
Yeah, definitely. Those are the stories, right? And you look at it, they come home. They sit in your heart because that's, you know, the pivotal moment, right? You're like, this is it right here. That's the turning point, right? That got me, that got us going, that gained the attention that we wanted. And look at you now, you know,
we were talking about like it was yesterday. I mean, that's how vivid it is. I'm sure that's how meaningful it is to you. A side note on that, Safi, how is O'Connor doing?
O'Connor, he got sick. He got really sick and he shipped to California. The flight was delayed and arrived with a big fever. And after that, he was doing pretty good at Santa Anita. And then they wanted him to go to the clinic. So, send to the clinic, and after the clinic, it's been a mess at the clinic. So
Gotcha.
He's quite sick still, and it's going to be a long road to recovery. I mean,
yeah. Okay. Well, our thoughts on O'Connor getting better.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, hopefully everything works out for O'Connor and everything goes well there. Just going to touch on, too, obviously, the Derby in 2022 with White Abario. That had to be something special, too, right? I mean, that had to be quite the party. How'd you prepare leading up to that? And then just what was that like, you know, going to the Derby here and the big stage, you know?
Yeah, well, that was the second time we were going to be there because we were there in New York traffic, obviously. But it wasn't that Derby. There was no fans. So it was kind of White Abario was kind of.
Yeah, it's a little different.
You want to say true Derby if you're going to call it a true Derby in that aspect. So, I mean, we went there that day, thought we were coming out the Florida Derby. We thought we were going in with a pretty good chance of winning our dream of winning. But he ran below the par that day, and that was it. But the Derby, you just hope to get there. And I mean, you want to win it, but you accept that it's a tough race to win. I mean, everything has to go right on the day. I mean, Rich Strike, he won. And I remember when he drew in, you thought almost like there was no way he could win. And that just shows you how horse racing is, that anything is possible. I mean, so the Derby is that kind of race where if you're in it, you have a chance. You
know? Yeah.
To be the part of the sport.
Yeah, we were way off on that. I mean, I was very high on White Abario. I was riding the momentum with you guys. You know, just, I mean, Tyler, White Abario, you, like the Florida boys making it to the Derby and having a really good chance. But yeah, I mean, anything can happen in horse racing.
It made a lot of sense.
Yeah.
It was making a lot of sense to us that day. Safi, listen, Gulfstream, obviously, predominantly, we're your home base here. You got a Tapeta track there. I was really going to ask you a couple of questions here. A lot of other tracks are talking about adding Tapeta courses to their tracks, you know, up in New York and whatnot. What are your thoughts on adding that additional surfaces?
Yeah, I think it's a great track to have as an additional track. I don't think it needs to be primary. I think having dirt, having Tapeta, and having grass, I think it's essential. I mean, especially for when the race is right off the turf. I find with the Tapeta horses, not all of them are as good on Tapeta, but I mean, it's just a rough estimate. I would say at least 75% are going to run on the Tapeta close to par. You know what I mean? Okay. With a grass horse on the dirt, it's totally different. Some of these grass horses, you run them on the dirt, and they're going to get beat 30, 40 lengths. You don't even want to run them because they don't handle it. And a lot of times they may not come out as good.
Yeah.
So I even the ones that don't run up to par on the Tapeta, the grass horses, I think they still come back in a good, safe order. And it's frustrating when you have a grass horse and you have to scratch 3-4 times in a row and not run for 4 months. So I think Tapeta is a great addition. It's a great training aid also when the weather is sloppy. You could breeze on it. There's a lot of horses that breeze on it and stay sounder. I think basically any track that is running top races should be required to have a Tapeta track, whether it be the racing on it or running on it. I mean, now you understand that space is an issue for some tracks, but
yeah.
I think you have to make it work somewhere or the other. I think it's a great invention, obviously. If you were to say one drawback is sometimes people run horses on it and then all of a sudden everybody's wants to run on the Tapeta.
Yeah.
So then you find it hard to fill the dirt race. I mean,
yeah, no, I get it.
And the truth of the matter is like some horses may not run good on the dirt and everyone's quick to put them on the Tapeta and then they run good on the Tapeta and stay on the Tapeta. But they needed another try on the dirt, and they're actually dirt horses. They can run well on the dirt. So I think that's the drawback. Like people are quick to put them on a Tapeta if they run bad, and then they run good on a Tapeta or okay, and they stay there. Then it hurts filling the dirt races.
Gotcha.
So that's the kind of negative. I don't know how you balance that, but it's something I'm sure that can be worked out.
Let me ask you, let me touch on this for a second. So not all turf horses like the Tapeta first time out. And in your opinion, is there a characteristic or a running style specifically for horse players should look at that maybe is an indicator that a horse is going to be better taking it to the surface the first time over?
Yeah. So like as I said, it always comes back to that saying, I say, when you think, you know, you don't know. So,
to tell us what we don't know.
Correct. Yeah, no, like me. So what I thought sometimes, and then sometimes it doesn't work. I find like horses that work decent on the dirt, like, and like turf horses that handle the dirt, at least not handle it as running, but as work okay on it, they tend to handle the Tapeta. Now, there's no exact science because they've had cases where I've been wrong about it, but that's what I kind of find. I mean, the best thing is trial error. I've had horses that run on Tapeta first time out, and they've kind of just run even. And then, like, you end up kind of condemning it all. They didn't like the Tapeta, but then the race comes off the grass again, and you give them a try, and then they win well on the Tapeta. So I think, like, you can't really judge them on one start. You know what I mean?
Yeah. that. I guess I was just, we're just looking for an edge. We're looking for the edge from the top trainer at Gulfstream to give us what works out to be the best. I have one more question here for you. You have lure him in running in the Grade 2 New Orleans Classic at Fairgrounds this week. We're going to Fairgrounds here and covering it for our podcast today. Stretching out another half a furlong, which I think helps his chances. How's he looking coming in the race?
Well, he's actually entered there, and he entered at Oakland, but he's going to scratch in both races.
Oh, no. Wow. Well, yeah. I could take that off my handicap today, that inside.
A little inside information.
That's a little inside. We're going to run him next week in the Gold Zapper at Gulfstream instead.
Oh, okay. I think you mentioned this before. If you don't have to move a horse, it's great. Why do it? I mean, if you can keep him home, find a better race.
No, correct. We looked at both spots. I mean, they're big purses, and we contemplated them, but we just got the horse a few weeks ago, and it just, they're not easy spots, and we kind of decided, you know what, we'll stay here for the first race that we're going to run him.
So let's stay on him then for the Ghost Zapper. What do you think? He's looking good. I mean, he looks good from a training perspective. It looks like he's training really well. You guys like your chances in that race, I'm assuming, since you guys are making the change, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have a couple of decent horses in there. I think he'll probably be like third or fourth choice, but we feel like his race two back. That's what we bought him off of when he beat the horse Optane. That went to Oakland and won that the big stake over there. We feel like if he was to repeat that, he could be very competitive.
Yeah, I agree, and I hear from the expert himself, so it makes me feel great.
Heard from the trainer's mouth.
One last question for me. I know you're busy, and I know you got a lot going on over there, but how soon till we see your son Rocco on some of your mounts? Is that the route he's going to be taking in the future here?
I mean, that's his dream. Realistically, you think that he's probably going to get too big, but I mean, if he stays small and he learns and he puts in the work, I mean, you never know. I mean, it's not something that I would push him to do, but
yeah,
he's definitely all into the racing aspect now. 2 years ago, he had no interest in it, and I kind of felt a little disappointed. You know, I mean, like, he had absolutely no interest. He'd go to races and not even pay attention to it. As I said, I felt disappointed, and then I don't know what happened, but he became basically, he's all into it. I mean, all he does every day is look at the condition books, look at results. He knows exactly the silks. He's obsessed by the silks. He tells me things and asks me questions that sometimes it makes me like, whoa, like where's he coming with all this?
That's so awesome.
I think racing's in his blood, and it's finally took a while to come out, but it's coming out. I don't know where it would lead to, but
yeah,
it's going to lead to some aspect that he's going to do something in racing, I would think.
Yeah, well, that's...
Don't look now. There's a 22-year-old who's going to know everything and tell you what's going on next.
For sure. It's awesome seeing him all dressed up in the silks and calling the race home. You know, it's great to see. And I hope we do see him on a horse, but I think you're right. I think in some facet, he's probably going to be around the racing in some capacity. You
absolutely.
Know,
it's in the blood.
It's great to see, you know. And I will bet every single time the Saffy connection, if that comes to fruition, it will be on my ticket 100 times out of 100 times. So,
yeah, the race instructions will be more like 24 hours constant conversation. All right, we're going to end this segment out here. We have a segment called just rapid fire. I've got like 5 questions I'll run at you real quick. Just give me the first answer comes to your head. Okay.
Sure.
All right. Favorite way to celebrate a big win.
A good dinner for sure. I like food.
Okay. Me too.
Favorite meal?
Steak or Chinese? Hard to split.
Well, I like that. Netflix or Hulu?
No TV. Maybe TVG on
the TVG.
TVG. Okay, there you go. Yeah.
The obvious answer.
On the computer, yeah.
I know you're from Florida here, so what's more special to you, winning a Kentucky Derby or a Pegasus?
Kind of hard. Kentucky Derby was a dream. Kentucky Derby is what everybody wants you to win. Obviously, last year kind of it rocked you, like what I experienced. So, I mean, I feel like Kentucky Derby, I have to win because it's a duty. Pegasus would be pretty important, too. So, hard to know.
All right. We'll say it's a tie. Both of them. Favorite sport to watch on your day off, if you get to watch anything?
Horse racing.
No, obviously.
That's it.
And last but not least, which is worse, driving in Miami or driving in Miami?
I'm a better driver than flyer. I'm not a good flyer. So
man, we were down there. It took us like an hour to go 5 miles. It's one of the worst experiences of driving I've ever had. Saffy, thank you so much for coming on this evening. It's a pleasure. It's been great having you. Thanks for taking the time out of your busy schedule.
Thanks a lot for having me on. It's been fun.
I will talk to you again
soon. Saffy.
There he goes, Saffy Joseph Jr. Still working.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Like he said, I mean, the proof is in the pudding, right? The winning comes after, right? But that's the hard work he's putting in there. It's 7:30 in Florida. You know, I'm sure he was up at the butt crack of dawn in the barn getting things ready. You know, I mean, this does not surprise me.
Well, he said he's still working. Yeah, still working with the horses. And then all of a sudden you hear the clip clop. And I'm like, oh, they really are right back there.
Yeah.
He's absolutely out there in it.
I really appreciate him taking the time, though. I mean, to fit us into his schedule. You know,
yeah, it was when we met him in Gulfstream in January.
I missed him, but you got to meet him.
Yeah. So when I met him in January, he was just absolutely just fantastic to talk to and just a great opportunity. I'm glad he came on the podcast. Look forward to having him on again. And hopefully, in the future, we've got some big opportunity races that he'll be training. And
yep, oh yeah,
I'm sure we're going to see his name again in Kentucky Derby.
I'm very confident we'll see his name in the Kentucky Derby at some point in some facet. Love to see him in the winner's circle. That'd be great. I'd be just as excited. But I mean,
usually am.
Yeah,
people that we have on the podcast where they win, pretty excited.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great guy. Obviously, like you said, you know, he puts in the work, and you can see it. I mean, there's nobody that's been as dominant at Gulfstream Park than he has. And yeah, I know he stays there all year round, and he's got, you know, a ton of great horses and great talent. Looks like he sounds like he's got a ton of great help around him. But
yeah,
I have to imagine that that's a pretty big operation he's got there.
Oh, I'm sure he's got good assistance that he has working. I love the insight he gave us on the horse that is going to scratch. Yeah. I can take it off my pick right now.
Breaking news on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
You know, we'll have to pivot a little bit there because I did like lure him in. I was literally going to ask the same question. Because I was like, yeah, I
had him in my pick. So we'll have to make that adjustment. But
also a little nod to the Ghost Zapper then. I mean, you know, obviously scratching those two races, was going to maybe even race at Oakland. They said, nope, we're going to actually put him in, keep him home. So a little bit makes nod sense. To a little bit of maybe an angle for that race. So
yeah, we'll be talking about it, I'm sure, on that day when he runs in the Ghost Zapper. We're going to handicap the late pick five, including the Louisiana Derby here at Fairgrounds. So we're going to shift gears here. Let's cover these last five races here, starting in race eight over at the Fairgrounds. Great weather this weekend. So interesting enough, should be decent weather. Looks like no rain, should have a fast track, should have good turf. And the fun part about this is there's a lot of horses, and many of these races coming off tracks that I'm sure we're going to talk about when we get through our handicapping here. So let's get to the eighth race. Eighth race, the mile and the 16th. This one is on the turf. It's the Tom Benson Memorial Stakes. Purse of $150,000 for fillies and mares 4 years old and upwards. I went to the outside here. I'm actually going with the 10 as my top pick. That would be Delahaye. And it's Tyler Gaffione, Chad Brown. This one's moving up in class, but won its last time out of optional, claiming $25,000 after breaking its maiden at $85,000. Second asking, just lost by a neck on debut. Horse is really consistent as far as like the workout tabs, as far as its current form. I just like everything about it. I like that outside position. I know it's been coming off the rail the last couple times, but it should be hustled up. Should be the pace of the race or near the pace of the race. And I'm just going to put the 10 on top. I just think that that front running style is going to bode well for the conditions at Fairgrounds. Now, I've got four underneath here that I'm probably going to have to trim down. I'll go through them with the one. Trying My Heart Out. This is Jose Guerrero, Shane Wilson. This is another one that's been moving late, running a lot of non-graded stakes races. Soft and firm were the last two conditions, and both of them pretty similar. Better off on the soft condition, probably going to get more of a firm condition on Saturday. But I do believe that the closing option, 99 speed figure last time out, and good workout tab as of recent, March 7th, 4 furlongs, 47-4, pretty strong. I think the horse is really in a good position, just going to have to save some ground. Then I got the 4 actually underneath, I think is in a good spot. Watch This Birdie. This is another one that should be coming off the pace. I think way on the outside or near the outside, the 9 has a great chance. That's Spirit and Glory with Flavian Pratt for Robert Falcone. This is another one that's going to be moving late. And then you got the 12 that I can't leave off the ticket. Ouvre, listen, this is one that I followed for a long time, but it's going from the sprint at the route. Now, the first time I went to a route, October 21st, it handled that very well. 95 speed figure that was at Keeneland, won that race in the mile in 136-2 in a field of 5. A little tougher race here on the outside. IRED's going to have it for Chris Block instead of J-Love in this. But, I mean, first time at the route was convincing, and I think the horse is well-conditioned. Should be able to go ahead and run the mile on the 16th, but I'm still going to put the 10 as the speed because everybody's going to be doing the same thing coming off the pace. So, Tyler Pacing, give me that 10 on top. See if we can go box to wire, wire to wire, gate to wire, whatever you want to call it. Just a wiring fashion. 10 with the 1, 9, 12, 4.
Yeah, we're close-ish. The horse that I landed on is actually the 14 all the way to the outside. You know, I was looking at that Kentucky Downs race all the way back in September. Ran a great race, made up a lot of ground, drew off, won by almost 3 lengths. that's the race I want to see. They tested their luck, went to the grade one, obviously was just a little bit outclassed there. Didn't really make much of an effort. It seems like, I mean, lost by 11 lengths, just really wasn't the race. For them. Yeah. I mean, it seemed like just get in the class, get in form. But again, coming off the layoff, obviously is something I'm looking at. It seems like this horse always tends to come off of a little bit of a layoff anyway, but if it runs anything near that September race at Kentucky Downs, a 102 speed figure eating up turf late, which is what's probably going to happen here. It seems like, you know, closing perspective is what I want anyway. Mm-hmm. I like its chances. I like Brian Hernandez teaming up with Kenny McPeak. And again, I like the drop from the grade one back down here to a ungraded stakes race. So I like the 14 on top. I'm very much aligned with you on the one. I was teetering on making the one potentially my top pick just because of look how far back that horse was. Seven lengths, almost eight lengths off at one point, and was able to gobble up ground and just came up short.
Yeah.
Obviously to Flavian's horse, which he's going to be on. Which is a nine, who I also have on the ticket. So I think they're going to be coming late. I think, again, this is a closing race if I've ever seen one. There's a lot of horses that want to go and sit off and then close down the stretch. So I've got that angle playing in this one. So I've got the 14 with the 1-9. And then the last one I had to throw on there and I took a really deep look at is the 11. Just thinking the simple fact that there's not a lot of speed that a horse that could possibly go out there untapped, unpressed. It's going to be Ray Lou, Brett Calhoun on Hidden Connection. You know, this horse has had success at Fairgrounds. Obviously, last race over the surface was able to get the job done. And again, untapped speed, ran a 24, ran away with the field because nobody pressed with this horse. So I think that's a huge angle because there is so much late pace in here that if there is one that's going to get out clean and have a great opportunity and likes the surface, that's going to be the 11.
It should like the turf.
Yeah.
I'm 50-50 on that.
Yep.
That's the only reason I kind of left that off is because of the surface change. That
was and that's definitely something to take into consideration, right? Not running over the surface. But
Safi just said, if they're taking good on the dirt, they do good on Tepeda. Yep. It could transition over to grass as well.
You never know until you run them on there. So that is the unknown. But, I mean, you're looking at the training. The horse is training really well, right? A 59 and 5 on March 8th. And then you even go back to February 29th, a minute flat and 5 furlongs. So, again, training really well going into the race. I trust Brett Calhoun's got some sort of play here. I think they are going to go to the front. I think they're going to try to set the fractions. And, again, dropping in class, right, not going to an ungraded stakes race, I think is also a very important aspect of this race as well. So getting class relief on a different surface, yes, but able to go the distance and able to get the lead, I think will be a very key characteristic for this race. So I landed on the 14 with the 1-9-11 here in this race.
I was strong on that 1-2 until I saw Ryan on Twitter, which is at Ryan Pip _. Yeah. Top thing I read this morning, starts taking a look at the handicapping for Fairgrounds. Post one is 0-49 at the mile and a mile and 16th on the turf.
All right.
It's his last tweet out there.
Well, I'm glad I didn't go with the one as my top pick.
That's why I dropped it down to two position.
Flying late, definitely. But yeah, that makes me feel a little bit better about not taking it as my top
position.
I looked at it.
I was very heavy.
Heavily on it.
And if we both would have liked it, it probably would have not voted well. Yeah. Let's go to the ninth race, a mile and an eighth. This is the Grade 2 New Orleans Classic, purse of $500,000 for four-year-olds and upwards. This another tricky race, but I'm going to go at five money supply. This is Tyler again, Joe Sharp. This one should be kind of a no-brainer here for me. 2-for-2 at Fairgrounds. Horses, 7 wins, 2 seconds, and 2 shows. It's 11 places out of 16. 2-for-2 for the year in 2024. Optional claiming 50,000 condition and a mineshaft Grade 3 at the Fairgrounds, which it just won last time out. I see the same thing going on here. Workouts are very, very much regimented, and you're looking at basically what you got 3 races ago, 2 races ago, and the last race. Same thing on the work tab, and the horse just shows up every day, stretching out a little bit. We're going off the muddy surface. Horses won on fast. Horses won on muddy, sloppy. The surface really conditions really doesn't matter. Joe Sharp's got this one top notch. I'm going to put it on top, so I will take the 5 on top. I like the 4, actually, also. I think Black Belt... I think he needs the added distance. I think this is actually going to bode well. So I'm going to have the 4 underneath, though, moving late, not being able to catch. And I also have the 7 Super Corinto with Irate Ortiz, first time out this year for Ignacio Correas. This is one that, you know, has been traveling around a lot, and it's been in a couple of different areas in Chile and, you know, the UAE and Maiden. And I mean, when it was at Gulfstream Park, it was pretty much solid horse, 98, 96 speed figures, an optional claiming 62,000, a 143-3 win on December 8th. And then took it to maiden and now back. Workouts have been good, keeping the horse sharp. So I'm definitely going to have that one on the ticket. That one could be a little more of a question mark, but I do like it. And obviously I hit the 10 lure him in underneath, which is going to be scratch per Safi. So if I had to go stretch and take anybody, I probably would put best actor probably on the ticket here, in a front running position, but not holding on, losing late. So maybe just holding on to third, where I thought maybe lure him in would be moving out of stalking position. So I'll add in that 9 underneath and scratch out the 10 that's not going to be running. So I'll put the 5 on top with a 4, 7, and 9.
So it was really hard for me to go against the 5. I think the 5 is going to be the favorite. I think the 5 should be the favorite. Is trying to make it, was at 6 straight.
Yeah.
So
going back to last year.
Yeah, I think the 5 is going to be tough. I did go outside the 5. I looked at the 3, which is Touch Upon a Star. It's Star Guitar, which is one of my favorite angles at Fairgrounds or Louisiana in general. Yeah, the Louisiana bred
Star
Guitar. It's like their favorite breeding ever, and very much so because it does very well in Louisiana. Yeah. The breeding always tends to bode well there. And it's Timothy Thornton, has had the mount here, knows how to ride the horse, has ridden this horse exclusively, has done the same exact thing exclusively throughout its entire career. Ran a 104 speed figure last time on the surface at Fairgrounds. I think that this horse is going to be the lead, the pace setter. I think that maybe, who is it? Is it the 9? Sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah. The 9 best actor is also the speed, but I think that Timothy Thornton is going to put this horse on front, and I think Flavian's going to end up having to sit off. I don't think he's going to want to push this horse too much. I think that we're going to see probably right around the 22, but I think that this horse can hold on and run a 22 and still pull away with the lead. So I'm really high on the 3, and I think obviously the 5 is going to be underneath for me. I can't leave it off my ticket at all. And then I have the 9 just underneath as well. I think sitting off, but just not being able to gobble up the ground late, because I think there's going to be a hefty lead on front with the 3. So I've got the 3 with the 5-9, really skinny, but a lot of speed in this 3 that I think is being undercut by maybe a little bit of a classier couple horses.
Yeah, I think that you got it nailed. I think we see where the pace is coming from. I just think the 5 is going to be able to gobble them up. I think off the pace, if the 3 and the 9 go out, like
if they
should
go out and press each other,
like
and
they
if
should.
The 9, yeah, like they should. If the 9 goes out there and presses the 3, I really think the 5 is going to have an easy trip to win. Yeah. But if either one of those two get out easy and nobody presses, then we're talking
somebody
about a different story.
Somebody has to go. The only way the 3 wins Touch Upon a Star is
we said
that
a couple times. We said that at Tampa. Only and guess goes. What?
The 3 has to go to the front.
Didn't work out. So.
If it doesn't break, if it doesn't get out, if it doesn't get to the lead, it's not going to win. It's the only way it does win. So couldn't agree more. I just think speed holds up to the top of the stretch, and then that that long Fairgrounds run, someone's going to run them down. Let's go to the 10th race, a mile and an eighth on the turf. It's the Grade 2 Muniz Memorial Classic. It is a purse of $300,000 for 4-year-olds and upwards. I'm all the way on the outside. Seems like I'm always taking these horses all the way on the outside, but I'm going to take the 13. I'm very busy. I ran for Chad Brown. Last time out, 103 speed figure on January 27th. Almost running down the winner. Warm Heart just came up short, half a length. I just like what Irad does on this horse when he's on him. He seems to know when to move the button on him in the allowance race and in the Grade 1. Last time out at Gulfstream Park, I had a little bit of a break here since January 27th. Great workout on March 2nd. I like the 101. I like that they're still working this horse at 5 furlongs and a couple decent at 4 furlongs in the interim. The horse doesn't run a ton. I mean, only ran 4 times last year, hit the board 3 out of 4 times. And this year is 1-for-2, hitting second. So one for one hitting the board second. So I just think this is a race that Irad should be able to go ahead and circle the wagons and be able to run them down. So I'm going to take him as long as he's running on the outside. I'll go ahead and take the 13 on top. Underneath, I got the 2, 3, 4, and 7. So I'm going back to the rail. Strong quality. I can't leave off the ticket for many reasons, obviously, for Mark Cassie. Web Slinger, I think, is another horse that disappointing last time out. That mile and the 16th in the Grade 1 was probably one of the more disappointing races. 6 by 3 lengths, but really just never really gave the normal run that you've seen it previously. At Santa Anita and Del Mar and Saratoga, those races where it really just kind of wheeled and won. You just really didn't get that in that last race. You didn't feel like it did at all. You didn't really get to run for your money. It should be an improved run this time out for Web Slinger, so I'm going to keep him on the ticket. Beatbox is one I don't want to leave off. Joel always makes me scary, but this is one that Joel rides pretty good, actually, and he actually rides pretty predominantly. He has gotten better. I don't know what the slump was, but he's improved himself. He's had a few multi-winner days, and this is one I think he has a good shot on here. Last time out in the Grade 3, just winning by a neck and timing it right to a lot of these other horses here, Strong Quality and a few others that he ran against. Should just be a replay on that. I think Beatbox is definitely a major contender here. We'll just try to put IRAD on top and see if we can get something out of here. My sleeper is Gigante the 7. I think this is one that can hit the board at a price. Probably going to be in my verticals. Not to win, but I think can definitely be there. Hopefully we're getting a price on there. So 13 with a 4-2-3-7.
Should just drop my form. So we're semi-aligned there. I like the two. I like strong quality. I think Johnny V and Mark Cassie here have a pace setter that is legit. Yeah, sure, it's not racing predominantly in the grade ones, grade twos, which I'd like to see and like to see how it does, especially making the step up to a grade two race here. But I think if it gets out to the front, there's not a ton of space or ton of speed in this race. I don't see a lot of horses going with Johnny V, and untapped speed at the front is pretty tough, especially with a Hall of Famer like Johnny V. So I think they've got a good opportunity here to get out and get clear, depending on who wants to go and mess up the race here for them. That's to be determined. But again, strong quality is very consistent and does everything you want to see in a front runner, right? Has no problem, no issue getting to the front. They're going to get him to the front. She's got a good opportunity, I think. So I like the two on top. I also like the four. I like Beatbox. Like you said, Joel has ridden this horse very well the last couple times, especially over the fairground surface. The horse definitely takes to the surface well. Got the job done by a neck, but still got the job done in the grade three. Again, taking a step up. Might be a little bit too much of a step. Maybe a little bit. I don't see this horse blowing our socks off here, I guess, yeah, in this race. But I think the horse will be right there down the stretch. I really like it underneath. And then I have your 13 as well. I'd be hard pressed to leave it off the card. IRAD teaming up with Chad Brown, obviously a dangerous connection in itself. Again, but just I feel maybe a little bit secondaritis in the last couple of races. Thought they had really good opportunities to win both of those. Granted, a grade one race is a little bit different than a grade two. So the class drop was definitely going to help this horse. But you know, I would like to see this horse coming off of a win and be like, yeah, it's going to be a lock.
Yeah.
But I think pretty interesting stat here. Favorites are winning at a 23% clip, and they're in the money 45%. But then the median payoff, right, is $10. So it looks like you're getting a semi-decent price.
Yeah.
I think the 13 is going to be the favorite here. I think that strong quality is going to be a lukewarm, probably 7-2.
Yeah.
So kind of what I was looking at, and the winners of this race, 64% of them are coming from, you know, shorter price than 5-1. So yeah. I think with all those things considered, I think IRAD's going to be a favorite. It's why I kind of faded IRAD a little bit here. I think second for sure, which is why I kind of gave the nod even more to the two. So
gotcha.
Couple things to take into consideration there, but a good race overall, I think. So
yeah, it's actually a tough race. There's a lot of other good horses here that we'd even talk about that should be in contention that you know, we've talked about them before, we're just not talking about them today.
Yep.
But yeah, overall tough race.
Very tough race. Try to get skinny, because I know that that first race I'm gonna have to spread a little bit, you know. So I only went three horses here, two of the 4-3, but
I get it.
Again, Tuesday too. You know, it's a Tuesday. Yeah. This could change.
I'm sure half our picks will be scratched on Saturday. Doesn't matter. It happens every time. Let's go to the 11th race. 11th race, a mile on the 16th. This is the Grade 2 Fairgrounds Oaks. This is for fillies 3 years old. So trying to get into the Kentucky Oaks. I mean, without getting into a whole big thing, I'm just going to take the 5 Tarifa. This is Cox and Flavian Pratt. Condition, pace of race, where I see the horse being positioned at near the front, stalking, and then winning it down the stretch. Basically a duplicate of the Rachel Alexandra, minus the sloppy conditions. Distance isn't a problem. Training's fantastic. Brad Cox as well. 2-for-2 at Fairgrounds. I'm just going to take the 5. I'm not going to overthink it. Could possibly be a single. There's a couple in here that I'm concerned about. One of them is going to be the 7. That's Our Pretty Woman. This is the additional speed here. This is with Rosario. One thing Rosario likes to do for Steve Asmus and horses, go to the front and never look back. And this is one that can actually run it down. Times aren't that great. Broke its maiden on debut and then followed up with an allowance 65,000 condition, and the workouts are good and solid. But I don't think this one has enough to keep up. So I'm holding it in the second position for all my verticals. I think the one's really interesting, right? VV's Dream. We've talked about this horse a few times. Kenny McPeak all of a sudden is like in contention when we're talking about graded stakes races. It used to be he could never win graded stakes races. Now he's starting to win them a little more consistently. He's getting better horses and opportunities. And when you got Brian Hernandez in the irons, that combination was always what you were looking for Kenny McPeak. And this is all this horse knows is Brian in the irons. It's been running really good. Now, if I could take the last two races out in the sloppy condition and get back to like what it was like in October in the Elsa Beatties, this is what you're looking for. for from this horse. You're looking for a horse that's going to sit in that stalking position. Great times, great works, great breeding. Adam Atoli, I think VV's Dream has probably the best chance out of any of these to upset my top pick in this race. And then last but not least, on the outside, I think the 8, Accommodate Eva. This is another one, Stuart Dallas and Corey Lannery. Probably written off in the past. Had some bad opportunities after it broke its maiden. Put it in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Didn't fare well. Did not really bounce back in the 75,000 non-graded stakes race. And then won a non-graded stakes race, $100,000 at Fairgrounds. Fairgrounds seems to be where it's probably doing its best running. But two back, I have no answers for that mile and 70 race. I mean, it wasn't the odds on favor. It was a non-Lasix race. Maybe that's part of it. This is a non-Lasix race. Maybe that's not going to be ideal for him this time around. But the horse broke his maiden off Lasix, and I'm hoping to get it back to some kind of form. But the workouts on February 19th, it came out, won the race, and then it came out with a nice, great workout on February 8th leading up to this race, which was 3 furlongs and 36. So trying to get the horse out, at least near the front, which you have to do at Fairgrounds, bodes well. So I had to put Accommodate Eva. Maybe it's only the tries and the verticals. That's where I'll have it in the third position. Maybe I'll move it up. We'll see how it looks on race day. But I got 5 with the 178.
I landed on the 3. I went back to the well. Last time we handicapped Fairgrounds, this was one of my top picks. Did not take to the sloppy surface at all. Mm-hmm. I think that was really the key proponent to that race. You know, just never gone on the sloppy surface. Obviously didn't take well. Sat second press, but just ran out of gas. Finished 4th by 9 lengths. Was a very, very unfortunate mount because I was pretty high on this horse. And I'm always high on a Florent Brad Cox connection. I think that seeing that it's going to be pretty decent out on Saturday at Fairgrounds and you're going to get back to maybe a fast track, I think that this horse has got a really good opportunity to be the front runner, run a completely different race than it ran last time out. So I really do think that the 3 has a really good chance of beating this field. You just didn't see it in the last race, which also makes me think I'm going to get a pretty decent price mm-hmm. because of the last showing. So I have the 3 on top. That's my top pick. And then I went right to the outside there, a couple of stalls, the 5 Tarifa. You're going to be coming late, just like it did last time, to the stalking trip, and then just have a lot of gas down the stretch. Took to the surface, obviously, very well of the 2 Chad Brown horses there. And then I also have the 6, Tyler Gaffleon, Brendan Walsh. Again, a horse that's going to be trying to eat up ground late. Last time just didn't get the job done. Same exact race against sloppy track. You're going to see something totally different in this horse. That was a really good opportunity there for Tyler. But I'm really high on that 3, and I'm still high on the 3. So I think the 6 will be right there as well. Definitely in the exotics for me. So I've got the 3 with the 5-6 to round out that one.
Gotcha. So you took both Cox horses.
Yep.
So you just got like
last time. Two Cox, just like last time.
Two Cox, just like last time. All right, gotcha. Just want to clear that up. I it's a very competitive race. It's all going to be about coming down to pace and who can actually make the moves. I just think with a lot of speed and forward placed horses, that maybe it does bode well a little better for the 11 who can sit off. But a lot of these horses need to run back on the fast track, and they've all done well on fast tracks. Just not everybody did great on the sloppy track last time out. Questionable. 12th race, mile and the 3/16. This is the Grade 2 TwinSpires.com Louisiana Derby. Purse of $1 million for 3-year-olds. This is the one that could get you in the big dance. I'm going to go with probably a gutsiest pick I've probably had in any of the major stakes races here for Derby. I'm going to go back to Hall of Fame here. I got a really bad taste in my mouth from the Risen Star. Never really got its opportunity. Was somewhat forwardly placed, but still within traffic. Just wasn't the best route. Now, I don't know how much Santana could have done any different. I expected a better outcome, but he's going to have to break. If he can get a decent break, he has to be forwardly placed. Because, I mean, obviously the time that he was able to break his maiden at and how he won that race, I'm still stuck on that 91 speed figure in that maiden race. And I think that if he does get the opportunity, looking at the works, if he can't get out there, I think he has a great opportunity. You know, under gun runners won this race. His sires won this race. I'm going to give him a pass on the Risen Star, and I am actually going to take him on top at a price. I usually wouldn't do something like that, but we'll see. This is fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, shame on me. So I'll take the 2 on top. Underneath, I'm going to take, you like to say, Agate Road, which I love that. Agate Road, I'm going to take, obviously, underneath. Hard to leave that one off the ticket for all the reasons that you probably already know. Catching Freedom, the 5. This one figures to be, you know, be there late. So I'm going to have it on the verticals, not to the win position, but I'll have it on the verticals. I think that's going to be some kind of second or third place showing for points. would be expected. I would not want to leave off the 7 Honor Marie. This is another one I'm going to give a pass on the last race. Very disappointing showing in the slot. Gets the fast track back. Has the workouts to support it. Should improve after that last race. Like to see some form somewhere near the Kentucky Jockey Club race back in November. Any of that form definitely is a strong contender in this race. And they're going to need it. And then last but not least, you don't want to leave Track Phantom off, who's already in pretty much probably for the running of the roses. This just secures a few more points, could put him closer in the top of the standings. But Steve probably may not be asking too much, but an even run. So I don't know if I'm not saying they don't want to win the race, but I don't think they're going to do anything crazy or outlandish to jeopardize their opportunities that they already have. But it should be the forward pace. You saw how it just got beat by Sierra Leone. It was a strong race, I thought. Track Phantom went better than I thought in the Ritz and Star than I originally had imagined he would in that race with the slop. So sloppy or fast, this is the horse with Joel that's going to be at the front, going to have to be a contender. So I'm just trying to beat the 12 with the one I picked last time, Hall of Fame, that didn't get a fair shake. Now we got a dry track. Let's get this 2 at a price on top, 2 with the 4, 5, 7, 12.
Yeah, I have the 12. I have Track Phantom. I think they're just going to punch your ticket, solidify the spot. Sloppy. Obviously, sloppy track last time, got beat by Sierra Leone, which brilliant race. And we talked to Tyler about it. It was a perfect ride, perfect trip for that horse. So, absolutely. I mean, if Sierra Leone isn't in that race, Track Phantom is in a different discussion here, I think. So
agreed.
I'm taking the 12 on top. I think Joel knows what he needs to do here. He's going to do it. He's been riding, like you said, better. Would still like to see a little bit more of a step up here from what he's capable of. And I know he's capable of, but I like his chances there on the 12. I had the 4, Agate Road. I read Todd Pletcher. Yeah, you have to have it on the card. Seconditis, like a mofo.
Yep.
Is always right there, though, coming down the stretch. And obviously, just trying to make up some points there. I have the 7, Honor Marie, like you said. Ben Curtis has been riding very, very well at Fairgrounds. I'd actually like to talk to him at some point. He just had a great meet, and he tries every single time, and he's going to give a great, great, great ride. I think they were just too far back last time. Couldn't make up the ground late.
Didn't like the slop.
You know, just kind of all the things weighed against this horse. So it was my top pick last time. I was very high. Was thinking about running it back, but I just think that Beatbox has got a really good opportunity here as well. So I have the 7.
Beatbox?
Track Phantom. So I really do like his chances here. And then obviously I think it'd be very difficult for me to leave off Tuscan Gold as well. Tyler, Chad Brown, horse is working out so well that it's hard for me to go against, posting some really, really solid speed figures in his first 2 races. Yeah, it just broke its maiden, but won by 6, almost 7 lengths. So I also have to have that on the card. So I'm going to keep it simple. I've got the 12 with the 4, 7, and 11 here in this race.
Okay. I think we both, you know, like coming out of the Risen Star, we both had horses that we liked. You liked Donna Marie. I obviously liked Hall of Fame. We didn't get the races we want. We want to see that race. Hopefully one of us get to see what we were expecting last time. But I agree. I think Track Phantom is going to be a beast and one definitely to contend with. Hard to go against it. That's your late pick 5 for the Fairgrounds on Saturday. Obviously, it's March Madness week. We're going to be watching a shit ton of games over the course of the next 5 days, I guess, including the Wednesday playing games and everything we got going with auction and whatnot. But we will be back next week. Obviously, we've got another podcast to do. We got more prep races to go through. It just doesn't stop. And we keep moving our way over to the Florida Derby with Elio and Bordone joining the podcast.
Yep. We have, the train doesn't stop moving here.
It does.
Yeah. Until the Kentucky Derby, we really don't stop moving, and then slows down just a little bit. And then we get on the Breeders' Cup train. So,
yeah.
Lots of stuff going on right now.
Absolutely.
But,
yep. I want to thank Safi Joseph Jr. again for coming on the podcast this week. It was fantastic having him. Other than that, good luck to all your tickets this weekend. Make sure you tune in next week when me and the kid are totally bitching and ripping up our brackets. Till then, see you next week.
Two.